time once again for Community Forum, and we are lucky to have with us this morning, live in the studio, Glenn Milner, who is with the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action. Glenn, thanks for coming in this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We are going to be discussing a bunch of documents that Glenn has unearthed from our government's archives related to DU, depleted uranium. And we should start out and tell people what exactly, for those who don't know, what exactly is depleted uranium.
Yeah, depleted uranium is a waste product in the processing of uranium ore. And it's actually the isotope U-238 that's used, that's separated from the natural uranium, and it's waste product, and it's been used starting in the, well, actually in the 70s, they began shaping it into bullets. They found that it has a special armor-piercing ability. Actually, what's been discovered in 2000, the Department of Energy has admitted that a lot of the depleted uranium that's been used has not been from the separation process. In fact, it's been after it's been through a nuclear reactor, and so it's a lot of it's contaminated with plutonium and what's termed as transuranic material, which is heavier than uranium. So it's, you know, the term depleted uranium is a little unclear, but it's because there's different types and different materials used, but it's radioactive material that's used in bullets because of its unique abilities to pierce armor. It also has a unique features about it. It can it actually burns as it hits armor. As far as like Iraqi tanks where it's been used extensively, it actually cuts clean circular holes right through the armor. So as it hits it, it tends to burn and creates what's termed as ceramic radioactive particles.
So it creates this, my understanding is it creates this cloud of fine particles of and obviously are radioactive particles that everyone in that area, in this case, let's say a tank, then breathes in for those that are surviving the initial hit from the shell.
Yeah, that's right. What happened, yeah, it's this stuff becomes airborne and it has the ability to resuspend in the air as it's disturbed. It has depleted uranium has a half-life of 4.5 billion years, so it's virtually forever. The material is out there, and it's been linked to a lot of to illness in the Iraq and other areas where it's been used. Birth defects. A lot of our soldiers have been ill in 1991. Probably now, a lot of our soldiers are becoming ill as they stay in Iraq and stay in these areas where it's used. It's pretty hideous material in that it won't go away. It's continually resuspended in air, and people in those areas are continually exposed to it.
Yeah, I'd heard a statistic from Dr. Doug Rocky that over a third of the U.S. Service people from 91 have applied for disability from things related to this. In January of this year, the Seattle Times and PI both carried an article about the Navy's use of depleted uranium off the coast of Washington, and it turns out you were actually the key person that had the documents that they based those stories on. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, as far as like at, you know, my work that I do with Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action, I started doing what they're called FOIA requests or Freedom of Information Act requests. In the first one I ever did was in 1986 when a train derailed that was carrying explosive rocket motors into the submarine base at Bangor. At the time, the Navy said there was nothing explosive on the train. And there was, you know, numerous newspaper articles about it. And even though it said explosive class A on the side of the rail cars, and we knew what the rail cars were for, so that's where I learned to do a FOIA request. And it took me a year to get the answer, but it turns out there was more than 100,000 pounds of explosive material on the trains. Actually, the rocket motors, the material used is more explosive than TNT. And so, you know, based on that find, I continued to make more FOIA requests to learn about activities that the Navy's doing and activities at the base, which actually led to a lawsuit that we filed in March 2001 against the Navy on this Trident D5 or Trident 2 missile upgrade at the base. The way that I got into depleted uranium is again researching the Trident issues, and I had made a FOIA request to the Navy regarding hazards for Trident submarines. And it seems hard to believe, but the submarines actually, you know, off the coast of New York a few years ago, a Trident submarine and an attack submarine ran into each other. In Kings Bay, in particular, they seem to have difficulty. They've sucked up buoys into the propellers. And so there's been problems, you know, navigation problems with the submarines. And so the request I made here brought this one document in December 2002, which stated one of the navigation warnings to the submarines was to stay clear of this area because the USS Fife, a warship, was firing depleted uranium rounds off the coast of Washington. And actually the area was between Westport and Nia Bay. And it turns out to be prime fishing waters. So at that point in January, I started heavily researching depleted uranium. And as you say, I released the information in a press release, and the Seattle Times and Larry Johnson, the PI, ran the stories in January 2003.
And what did you find out when you started looking into this more? I mean, it sounded like the Navy at one point said, "Oh no, we don't use that stuff anymore."
Well, yeah, on the website, the gun that they fire is called the Close-In Weapon System, or they call it the Phalanx, or they also CIWS gun, which fires a huge amount of bullets. It's actually a last defense for incoming missiles and airplanes. It has the capability of firing, it actually can fire 4,500 rounds a minute, so it's like 80 rounds a second of this 20 millimeter bullet. On the website that the Navy has, it says in 1988 that they converted to tungsten bullets, and really because they didn't need this special armor-piercing ability because the missiles are thin-skinned. They're not heavy armor that's coming in. So they never needed it in the first place, and they said they converted, which, of course, they hadn't, you know, or at least they're using up their depleted uranium stocks. So what I tried to find out in January is specifically, you know, how much they're firing and where they fired it, which is, you know, pretty simple concept, you know, because we wanted to know how much DU is dumped in these fishing waters off the coast of Washington. We also wanted to know, have they been firing it in Canadian waters where they have, you know, very common for them to have military exercises in Canadian areas and with the Canadian Navy. The information I've gotten largely from the Navy is stating that they don't have records of this. And also, I mean, which is pretty outlandish, they said they don't have records of even where it's stored in the Puget Sound area.
So they just have no idea whether your munitions are stored around here.
That
is reassuring.
Well, it's pretty bizarre. I mean, another question I asked was, I think Commander Sellers, she's with Navy Region Northwest, stated that the sailors are medically monitored. So that was another question that I asked, and I actually got an answer to that. They're not. They went to the USS Fife, and went through all their records, and they don't have any special medically monitoring of the sailors, which we kind of got back from some of the sailors. I mean, from the Ground Zero website, a lot of times when an article's in the paper, people will go to the website and we'll get comments from people who are involved, and we got comments from sailors who said they were never medically monitored, and they've been around this close-in weapon system. So
one of the things that comes up in the media when the Navy is questioned publicly about this is, or the Pentagon, any of the representatives of the U.S. military, is they go out of their way to say that this stuff is totally harmless and doesn't cause a problem, you know, to anyone. You can, I believe the quote I hear quite a bit is, you can like literally eat the stuff and you'll be fine. But based on the documents that you have shown me, that I have a copy of and you have a copy of there, that it seems to be what they present to the public and what they put on their own internal documents are 180 degrees apart.
They are. You know, it's hard to believe, but earlier this year, I'm not sure whether it was from the Department of Defense or from the Navy, but Congressman Inslee and McDermott were informed that, you could eat it or ingest it, and there's no problem. But some of the documents I got, you know, I have filed quite a few FOIA requests, probably about 40 or so since this initial stuff came from the Navy on the USS Fife firing depleted uranium. One of the things that I find pretty amazing is how, I mean, they've known from day one, well, actually there's records that I've seen from the 40s where they said that this is really dangerous material. But one record that I got from the Army, which I found pretty amazing, is it's just an MSDS sheet, or Material Safety Data Sheet, from 1984. And it says, it says, should DU be handled in powdered form, or should a DU penetrator oxidize resulting from a penetrator's involvement in an accident such as a fire? Then the intake of DU aerosol or ash via inhalation, ingestion, or absorption presents an internal radiation hazard. And this is dated May 14th, 1984. And then it goes on, depending on the solubility of the particular DU compound in body fluids, it may also be toxic, particularly to the kidney. So it's the radiation hazard plus just the toxic material involved. And then another item, should an accident occur or DU corrosion be discovered, cleanup and decontamination should be performed only by authorized personnel. Anyone who has inadvertently come in contact with material that is potentially contaminated with DU should be surveyed for contamination by authorized personnel as soon as possible. Remove any clothing which may be contaminated. Wash hands, arms, face, and any other exposed parts of the body with soap and water. Do not eat, drink, smoke, or apply cosmetics before being satisfactorily decontaminated. And this is, you know, just the regular MSDS sheet that the Army had was given to me in May.
This is a hazardous component safety data statement, which I believe is they produce for just about anything that's potentially toxic, any chemical or whatever. I remember seeing these when I worked in the computer industry for different things that came in.
That's right.
And right on the cover of it, it says decomposition products toxic, avoid inhalation and ingestion. So that seems to fly quite opposite of what we've heard, at least in the media, being represented by different government reps.
Yeah, it does. Actually, another issue I'd like to mention is the fact that, you know, the Navy has said they've got this 20-millimeter bullet that they fire in the close-in weapon system. But then I got a fair amount of stuff from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and it shows in there that the Navy has always insisted that this is the only gun that they have that fires DU. But from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, it shows that they fire in a 25-millimeter gun too, or at least they've done testing with it, and it's called a Mark 38 machine gun. It's kind of an old style machine gun. It fires like, I believe, something like 1,500 rounds a minute or something like that. And also, there was in these records, it showed that there was a person with the Navy who was in charge of Naval Air Command, who specifically was in charge of DU weapons. So that's a totally new area as well, which trying to find out more on this, but it appears as there's at least three weapon systems with the Navy where they're firing depleted uranium.
I believe, and also on documents that you've turned up, there seems to be a significant effort to keep notices on the outside of ships free of anything that would indicate that there's radioactive materials on board, so that when they go into international ports or even local ports, like, let's say, Seattle at, I don't know, Seafair, that people don't get alarmed. Yet, if you go below deck, they have significant warnings around the magazines that contain these munitions.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I guess because, you know, our focus at Ground Zero has been on the Trident missiles. And, you know, specifically, you know, we've had many demonstrations and we've stopped trains that are carrying Trident missiles. And we've learned the hazards of these shipments are pretty amazing, pretty unbelievable. And so, you know, my focus is kind of, I always look at those issues. And so, you know, I started looking at how they ship it, how they store it. And I got some documents from the Department of Transportation regarding this. And they actually have an exemption, which is up, incidentally, June 30th, 2004. Hopefully we can kind of mount some sort of effort to keep it from being renewed. Anyway, the exemption is for the shipment of depleted uranium, and it's called Department of Transportation E-9649. And actually it's been renewed 8 times. But what it says is when they ship depleted uranium, and they ship it by ship, by rail, and by on the highway, when they ship it, they don't have to put radioactive material on the side of the rail car or on the side of the truck. All they have to do is put this number on the side that says DOTE 9649. And then, supposedly, if there's an accident, anyone involved would know, I don't know how they would, but they are supposed to know that that's there's radioactive material involved. And I started, you know, I asked the Department of Transportation, just how is it that you could do this, that you could offer an exemption? Because, you know, my thought is if there's an accident, say on I-5 or something like that, where there's a truck.
Which is not uncommon.
Yeah, they happen. You know, it's very, you know, if it was an accident severe enough where there'd be a fire, quite likely the driver would be incapacitated or unable to communicate what's inside of his truck. You'd have the material would be on fire, and basically you'd have a what would be known as a dirty bomb. You'd have radioactive material that's burning, which is exactly, you know, what this MSDS sheet warns us about. You know, when it's in an oxidized state or burning, it becomes suspended in the air, and it's radioactive and a very dangerous material. So, and the answer I got from the Department of Transportation was that, well, the explanation was actually from earlier documents. And so I asked around for that, and I got this document dated August 11th, 1986, and that's from the Department of the Army, and it's their reasons for this exemption. And this letter is from the Department of the Army to the Office of Hazardous Materials Transportation Division of the Department of Transportation. And what this document says, 1986, is our request for exemption is based on the needs of the DOD to ship DU munitions in a manner that does not draw attention to the fact that they contain a radioactive component. Well, I mean, it's pretty clear they want to keep it secret. The ability to ship in this manner serves the best interest of the DOD without compromising the safety of the general public. There are 3 reasons for transporting DOD DU munitions without drawing a public attention, by placarding trucks or marking munition containers as radioactive. First, marking the outside of the DU munition containers as radioactive may create friction with foreign governments when foreign nations handle DU munitions during shipping, loading, or unloading. Secondly, we do not want to generate unnecessary public concern about the radiation risks associated with DU munitions. Thirdly, we do not want to raise public concerns by placarding trucks with the words radioactive and explosive, since the combination of these two hazard class placards may be construed to mean that nuclear weapons are being shipped when this is simply not the case. Well, I mean, I would say it is the case. And the fact that you've got radioactive material that's, I mean, and the DU bullet is radioactive material in the form of the bullet, you know, the penetrator, and then it's attached to an explosive shell that burns or explodes. So you've got the two, you got the two issues that will ignite that material, send it airborne in the same package. So it's a very unique situation, and it shouldn't be just labeled explosives. Obviously, it probably should have its own special designation as radioactive and explosive in case there's a fire.
Yeah, I noticed in their document they've got that word between radioactive and explosive. They've got "and" underlined very heavily.
Yeah.
So it's obviously of great concern to them.
Yeah.
And I would think that would be of great concern to citizens that are perhaps in a car, you know, in traffic next to a large truck carrying that.
Yeah, well, they say they're doing us a favor by not telling us, because it would create, here's what they say, unnecessary public concern. So,
well,
that's it.
So, another thing that is in that same document, they're talking about the... that the Army is saying that it's okay to do this because the Navy has had a rich history of working with DU munitions, and it specifically says the Navy Department has been shipping DU munitions since April 1974 without a transportation accident, which kind of begs the question, since the stuff you were looking into in 86, they had originally said that they hadn't, you know, that there had been no problem there.
Well, they had the accident, yeah, in 1986, and they said there wasn't anything explosive on the train. I mean, in this case, I mean, how would you know for sure? It's because it doesn't even say radioactive on it. If there was an accident, I'm pretty sure the Navy wouldn't inform us. And I guess it comes back to this issue, you know, where I was asking the Navy, you know, where's it stored? You know, where have you fired it? How much? And they keep insisting they don't have records of where they store it in the Puget Sound region. Yeah. The thing is, in the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, in their license, they have to keep very close tabs on it. In fact, if they lose, I think it's something like 43 of these bullets, they lose 43 bullets, they're supposed to file a special report with them to try and determine what happened. But, you know, here they're saying there's, you know, they've got a gun that can fire thousands of rounds a minute, and they don't keep track of it. One thing that I think kind of shows the problem with the Navy handling this is, you know, I realized that the Coast Guard also has this Phalanx gun on it, this close-in weapon system on a lot of their ships. And so it seemed really unlikely that the Coast Guard would want this, because they're, you know, because they're, I think they defend our coastline. But I filed a FOIA request with the Coast Guard to see if they handle depleted uranium. And what I got in response was, well, they haven't had a license since 1992 with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, so they're not legally able to handle it since then. But their gun does fire it. And the documents I just got recently from the Coast Guard said in August 2001, the Navy mistakenly shipped 20-millimeter depleted uranium rounds to the Coast Guard in Seattle. And the Coast Guard in August 2001 received 1,700 rounds of this 20-millimeter radioactive bullet at Pier 36 in downtown Seattle. And they loaded it on the U.S. Coast Guard cutter, Mellon. And what I was told was as soon as the Coast Guard realized they had radioactive bullets, they got rid of it. And in the document, they said they returned it to Indian Island, which is the first time I've gotten any documents that said where they store it. So that's one place we know. And I assume they store it in Everett, at the Everett Naval Base, because that's where the USS Fife was based. And also, well, I guess I keep rattling on here, but one of the documents on depleted uranium that the Navy had was they're supposed to unload it when they're at port. So if the USS Fife, it did have depleted uranium on it, and it was supposed to unload it every time it came into Everett. But anyway, this shows that, the Navy didn't even know they shipped the wrong rounds. And, maybe part of this problem is the fact that they use this exemption on their shipping containers, where maybe their own people don't know what E9649 stands for. If this stuff was labeled a little better, citizens would know, and probably the Navy would be able to track this a little better too.
All right, just have a few minutes left, and wanted to let people know about some of the events that the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action has got organized coming up, and that's related to this and tangential to it. So tell people about that.
Yeah, on July 13th, Jackie Hudson, a member of Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action, will be speaking at University Baptist Church. Her talk begins at 1 o'clock. There's actually like a lunch that begins at noon. And she is she was involved in a Plowshares action in Colorado against a Minuteman III missile silo in August 6th. And she had been jailed she just got out a couple months ago, and she's going back for sentencing. She was found guilty by a federal judge. And she goes back on July 25th for sentencing. It's expected that she will be given 5 years in prison. And their crime was that they took down 90 feet of fence to expose this weapon of mass destruction. Another event coming up, actually, is we've decided to meet the fleet at Seafair. We've done this before in 1998, and in 2000, Seafair brought in a Trident submarine, and we thought it would be appropriate to meet it this year. I mean, folks in the Seattle area have been working for months, or many for years, on the Iraq, another Iraq war, and against the sanctions. And on July 30th, Seafair is going to be bringing in naval vessels that fire this very same close-in weapon system. So this is the same guns on these ships that were firing depleted uranium rounds into prime fishing waters off the Washington coast. Supposedly, I guess, activists or people in the Puget Sound area are supposed to embrace these war machines after they've been firing radioactive material in our fishing water, and that these probably will be the very same ships that have been waging war on Iraq. We're not always this busy, but we have another action on August 8th and 9th at the submarine base at Ground... the submarine base is Ground Zero. Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action will have a demonstration at. And the theme for this demonstration is nuclear disarmament begins at home. And folks will be gathering there in the afternoon on August 8th, 9:30 in the morning on August 9th. And there'll be an action, probably a nonviolent direct action or civil resistance or civil disobedience around 1 o'clock or so at the submarine base at Bangor.
And of course, the Bangor submarine base being the largest cache of weapons of mass destruction, I believe, known on the planet, located just a mere 15 miles from downtown Seattle.
It's 15 miles from Seattle. Actually, and it's part of the Navy Region Northwest, which is, that's probably the thing that we need to look at, is there's a lot of other issues the Navy is doing in our region. One is the sonar testing, which is seems to be very damaging to marine mammals, problems with the orca whales and other marine mammals. Also, there was records that were revealed about, within the last year where they've done mine detonation exercises. This is exercises the Navy does to
test their torpedoes.
Well, no, not to test the torpedoes, to actually detonate mines that are in the water, which was destroying, killing fish. So there's a lot of activities the Navy's doing here that we need to look at.
Very active. All right, we're pretty much out of time, but real quickly, how can people find out more about the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action?
At the website, www.gzcenter.org, GZ for Ground Zero.
Very good. And do you know the phone number out there off the top of your head?
I believe it's 360-779-4672.
Okay. Well, want to thank you for coming in this morning. It is always very enlightening to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Just been talking with Glenn Milner, who is with the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action.